The following podcast is presented by Wellspring of Life Church, a community of faith, hope, and purpose.
Let's go ahead and open up to Psalm 90. We're going to be there most of the time. I'm going to kind of jump all over the place, but that is really going to be the anchor of tonight, is Psalm 90. How many of you guys have seen the movie Everest? Came out in 2015. Yeah. Maybe you haven't seen that movie if you're an avid reader. A really popular book along the same lines, same story, was Jon Krakauer's book called Into Thin Air. Anybody read that? Yes again? All right. Matt's two for two, 100%. All right, so when I watched that movie a couple years ago, it left an imprint in me because of how well it kind of went through people's stories, and to me, it kind of seemed like, I could kind of track with what some of them were trying to experience, but at the same time, you could ask my wife, like, I went off for a while after this movie. As soon as it was over, for like 2 hours, I started talking about, man, that was such a waste of life, these people. Like, one of the people that died on this 1996 expedition left a wife and a new baby, and I'm just like, that kid's going to grow up without a child because this person had to step on top of a mountain. I'm like, what? So it embarked me on a little journey for a while, and I can say that the journey went nowhere with it. I really just tried to relate fully with what they were doing, but kind of what I'm going to talk about tonight is something I wish I would have had the chance to tell every single one of the people on that 1996 expedition, and I don't know if it would have done any good because of where they were at in their life, but I hope that you guys can kind of relate to the message tonight, whether you love to climb, love to be outdoors, love adrenaline, whatever, I think this could resonate with you. But one story in that 1996 expedition was the story about Andy Harris. He was one of the guys that summited Everest, and he stayed up there too long. And there's a few different names for it, but when you get up above a certain elevation, it's the dead zone because you start to die. Your body starts to fall apart, and if you stay there too long, you will die because you're depriving your body of oxygen, and he stayed up there too long. People told him, you got to come back down. He wanted to just soak it in, but it ends up costing him his life because he's coming back down Everest. His body has already been starved of so much oxygen. He starts to hallucinate. His body is just starting to shut down. Now, one thing they do on Everest is they leave oxygen tanks as they go up, and in different key places. So as people are coming back down and their bodies are starved of oxygen, they can stop at these and suck in some oxygen to keep them going to the next checkpoint. Well, Andy Harris got down to one of those oxygen tank checkpoints, and he radioed the base and said, all of these tanks are empty. And the base said, well, let's check with some other climbers who have already come down, and the climbers that already passed that cache said, no, those tanks are full. None of us touched them. They are full of oxygen. So the base radioed back up to him and said, no, there's oxygen in them. Just tap into them, you'll be fine. And he argued, said, no, they are empty. They are empty. And the base said, no, they're full. Just try it. And no matter what they did, Andy Harris was just convinced that they were all empty. And he didn't try a single one of the oxygen tanks, and he didn't make it to the next checkpoint before his body shut down, and he died. The point of telling you that is, our bodies, every single one of us, from the moment we're born, we're starved. We have a desire in us, a hunger in us, that we are constantly trying to fulfill. And most of the time, we don't even know what it is. And I'm not talking about your next meal, water. there's something in us, an ache in us, a hunger in us. That's probably just the best word I can go with. And our body feels like it's being starved because it is. From the moment we're born, our body is starved and needing something. And we spend the rest of our life trying to figure out what that is. And the whole time, the cachet of oxygen is right in front of us, full as can be. But we're convinced that it's not. You know, and the longer we go through life without really knowing what that need is, the harder it is to recognize what that need actually is that fills that hunger within us. Ravi Zacharias is quoted saying this, and if you haven't treated yourself to Ravi Zacharias before, I encourage you to do so. He says this, he says, if we are to enumerate all our hungers, we might be surprised at how many legitimate hungers there are. The hunger for truth, the hunger for love, the hunger for knowledge, the hunger to belong, the hunger to express, the hunger for justice, the hunger of the imagination, the hunger of the mind, and the hunger of significance. And we can keep going. And vast psychological theories have emerged in recognition of these hungers or needs. And here's my point. Some of our individual pursuits may meet some of these hungers. Education may bring knowledge. Romance may bring a sense of belonging. Accomplishments may bring some significance. Wealth brings some things within reach. But the message of Jesus affirms that no one thing will meet all of these hungers. And furthermore, none can help us know whether the way we fulfilled them is legitimate or illegitimate until we have tasted the bread of life that Jesus offers. That nourishment defines the legitimacy of all else. So the big question tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is this. How are you currently trying to satisfy the hungers that you have in your life? All of you came in here hungry in some way. All of you spent today, this week, this month, this year, trying to fill some kind of hunger in you. If you deny that, then that means you're probably not in tune with what you're doing. And that's possible, but we're all trying to do things to satisfy ourselves in some way. So what I want you guys to just be thinking about is, how are you trying to satisfy your hungers? What are your hungers? Do you know what you hunger for? Do you know what ways you're trying to satisfy those? The definition of satisfaction is the fulfillment of one's wishes, expectations, or needs. So another way to think about that big question is, what are you wishing for right now? What do you expect out of life? What do you expect out of yourself? What do you expect out of the people in your life? And what do you feel like you need? If you're a parent, you understand that from an early age, we really confuse needs and wants, right? Can I get an amen from all the parents? Kids confuse what they need. My daughter's always coming up to me, I need this, I need this. And they don't. They don't need it. But some people, most of us, to one degree or to a really extreme degree, don't grow out of that. We continue to confuse what we want and what we need. And that's all that striving to satisfy our hunger. We have a focus first for tonight. How do you guys feel about memorizing a verse? And if I hit the jackpot and you already have this one memorized, that is awesome. And the likelihood of that, I don't know the likelihood, but it's really rare. How many verses do we have in here? Anybody know? Yeah, so I thought, I don't know either. So there's a lot, and I doubt you have this one memorized, but if you do, awesome. This is going to be easy for you. So if you guys will look at Psalm 90, verse 14. If you don't have the ESV, Yours is going to read a little bit different than mine. We're going to memorize the ESV, and you guys can kind of adjust that in your own mind. We're going to do this little activity together. It might seem elementary, but it'll be fun. We'll all walk out of here with a new memory verse. I swear we're not, like, this isn't the kids' ministry over at the Potter's house. I don't have any coloring projects. If I did, we would do those too. All right, Psalm 90, verse 14. We're going to be saying this throughout tonight, and by the time you leave, hopefully you've got it locked in there. We're going to say this a few times together. So the ESV, if you have it on your phone and want to bring up the ESV, that would be good. If not, then you can just listen to the version that I read off here. It says, "Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days." That's pretty simple, right? Right? All right, so let's go. First line, you guys repeat after me. Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love. We're going to do that one again. Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love. One more time. Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love. All right, now you guys do it without me. Matt, you're cheating. I saw you looking. Thanks, Haley. Okay, so let's do the second half. That we may rejoice and be glad all our days. That we may rejoice and be glad all our days. One more time. That we may rejoice and be glad all our days. All right, you guys go.
That we may rejoice and be glad all our days.
Man, this is kind of fun. All right, let's do the whole thing together. You ready? Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. All right, now I'm walking away from it, so hopefully I got it memorized. I promise I didn't do it before we came here, so I'm with you. Same page. You guys ready? Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Woo! I got it. You guys get it? Without looking? All right. So I'm going to quiz you guys at the end. Hopefully you still got it. All right, guys. So the backdrop to all of this, to Psalm 90, might surprise you. Look at the very beginning of the psalm. Who wrote it? Moses. Does that surprise you guys? Yeah, usually like David probably, or Song of Asaph or something, but no, this is Moses. Hundreds of years earlier wrote it. What is it doing in here? Well, it's because it has a similar message to it as the surrounding psalms, and we know that Moses wrote psalms or songs or prayers more than just this one. Got one in Exodus, we got one in Deuteronomy. It was something that was characteristic of him. But the backdrop to this psalm, now, Bible historians argue about the exact time that it was given, but I like to agree with this because it works really well and it sounds awesome, and the evidence that I saw for the people who are arguing for it is very convincing. They said that this psalm was given as a prayer and a song right after God's judgment was passed down on the nation for their refusal to go into the promised land. This is going to be at the onset of the wandering in the desert for the next 40 years, or until that whole generation's gone. So that verse that we just memorized is a prayer that the nation of Israel would have had to have said after they just found out from God that they're not going into the promised land, they're staying in the desert until they're dead, and the next generation will take the promised land. That's crazy to me. That just seems like, and if you read the whole thing, and we're going to read passages of it, but if you're going to be praying to God, God just told you, sorry, you missed out on the promised land, and you're supposed to turn around and say, all right, Lord, just satisfy us with your steadfast love. So we'll rejoice and be glad all our days, even though we're going to spend all our days right here in this hot desert until we're gone. It's not, we're going to be glad all our days because we know we're going into that promised land. We're stuck here. But we're going to be glad and rejoice all our days regardless of that. Matthew Henry says, with respect to those that make God their chief joy, as their joy may be full, so it may be constant, even in this vale of tears. It is their own fault if they are not glad all of their days, for his mercy will furnish them with the joy and tribulation, and nothing can separate them from that. So another word for satisfaction, one that you see more times throughout the Bible, is the word contentment. Contentment is one of those elusive things for me and anybody that struggles with ADHD or like me, or striving or perfectionism or any of that thing or any of that stuff. Contentment's elusive because it's always about the next thing. It's about accomplishing. It's about getting things done and getting it done right. Until it's done right, you're not going to be happy with it, and you're just going to be going, going, going. Your mind doesn't shut down. But to feel that peace or that satisfaction or that contentment is key here. And that's what tonight is all about. That is the message that I'm trying to bring tonight. And it is the prayer that the nation of Israel had as they wander through a desert for 40 years until their life is gone. Now, there's a lot of verses about contentment. I'm going to read several of them. If you guys want to stay in Psalm 90, you can. But I'm going to hop over to 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6. If you want to read with me, you certainly can as well. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. Say this, and this is going to start out, you guys might have this one memorized or recognize it. It says, now there's great gain in godliness with contentment, or some people have memorized it, contentment with godliness is great gain, whatever, saying the same thing, but for we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world, but if we have food and clothing, with these, we will be content. If we have food and clothing, with these, we will be content. How many of you have food and clothing? Everybody here. So we should all be content, right? At peace. Nothing's bothering us because we have food and clothing. So the Bible says. I know I'm right there with you guys, struggling with that one. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires. Man, again, amen to that. We have a lot of senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith, pierced themselves with many pangs. Man. Food and clothing. So when we walk out of here dressed and fed, we're going to be happy and at peace and content. Another one from Paul to the church at Philippi in Philippians chapter 4. This is leading up to the famous verse that so many people have memorized, the verse 13 that says, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. One of the most misused Bible verses in the whole Bible, but that's a message for a different day. But verses 11 and 12 are the ones I want to focus on. Paul is saying, not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. So here Paul is saying it doesn't matter what he's facing. It doesn't matter how hard times are. It doesn't matter if he's doing really well in life or struggling to get through life. He's content. And as 1 Timothy says, as long as we have food and clothing, didn't even say we have to have a house or a car. I mean, it's the basics here. And then when you get beyond the basics, that's when you start to get burdened down with life. You know, back to Psalm 90 here, the whole focus of this psalm is beautiful, this prayer. It's looking at the eternality of God and the brevity of human life. And I was always told that the older you get, the shorter life seems. And I'm only 35, but I mean, I can already start to see that, and I'm sure those of you in here that are older than me could attest to it. Our perspective, looking back, when you get to a point where you look back and there's more of your life than there is forward, it changes perspective. And regardless of whether you live to be 100 years old or not, that's really, really short. And it even says that in here. Like it says, if you're going to be 70, in verse 10, the years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80. Yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone and we fly away. But I really wanted to focus on the first five verses here because of how beautiful they are. It says in here, Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You return man to dust and say, return, O children of man. For 1,000 years in your sight are but a yesterday when it is past. Or as a watch in the night, you sweep them away as with a flood. They are like a dream, like grass that is renewed in the morning. And looking at God, the eternality of God, the keeping that perspective, I think, is what is going to help the nation of Israel for 40 years wandering through the desert, knowing like, okay, if I do live for the next 40 years, and this is my lot in life to be here in the desert, that's just a really brief time period. And keeping that in mind, like if you're early in life or if you're late stages of life, you know that it doesn't matter. We're all here for a short period of time, and then comes eternity. And thinking about it in that way helps us to live out the prayer of Psalm 90, verse 14. It helps us to be satisfied fully with his steadfast love. And then if we do live in a desert for the rest of our life, we can still rejoice and be glad all of those days. So having this focus of, you know, eternity, short life, then comes eternity, we get a lot of things from that. It presents us with a lot of things, but all of those, I think, can be summed up in one word, and that's freedom. So I'm going to look at, just present you guys with five things that I think it gives us freedom from. One, freedom from striving. You know, a lot of people in here might try to find satisfaction through the next achievement, trying to hit that next goal in life, make that next promotion, get that new and better home, get that new car, hit this amount in your savings account, try this new thing or that new thing, meet that new person, get into that new relationship, get married, and your eyes are constantly set on what's the next thing, what's the next thing, and I'm not going to be satisfied until I get to that next thing. And when you get to the next thing, you realize I'm still not satisfied. What's the next thing? When we are satisfied with God's steadfast love, doesn't matter what that next thing is, because that is the thing, the last thing, the greatest thing. The other thing that it sets us free from is from despair. And life can be hard, right? Life can cut us really deep. We can ache, we can hurt like we never thought possible. When we face losses and trials in life, but it doesn't mean we have to despair. Because we will be fulfilled with his love. And it doesn't matter those losses that we face along the way, they're going to hurt, but we're still going to be satisfied because we're no less off than we were before because we are fully satisfied in his steadfast love. Another thing is it sets us free from painful choices. Really painful choices. You know, in the struggle to find satisfaction, we can make some really dumb choices, right? Yeah. Yeah, we can make some really bad choices when we are trying to find satisfaction, whether that's in a person like, oh, I'm just going to stay in this relationship. Maybe they're going to change. Maybe they'll treat me like I should be treated. And you stay there way too long and you're just trying to get that satisfaction from this person. It's not working. Or maybe you try to find that in a substance. I spent about, quick math on the spot, 7 years of my life trying to find that satisfaction in a bottle. And by the time I finished one bottle, I try to find it in the next bottle. And you know what? Didn't matter how many bottles I had, there's no satisfaction to be found. But you want to know an awesome side note to that? Is next month is 8 years without a single bottle. Yeah. Or we might be trying to find it in the next experience, like with Everest. It's like, I got to be on this mountain. I got to be on this summit. It's the only time I feel alive. And then when you get down, if you get back down, what's next? The next mountain. In the video, Everest, one of the guys on there who happened to make it back down talks about how there's this black cloud that follows him until he gets on the mountain, and then the black cloud disappears, and he feels alive. And you compare climbing Everest with experiencing the eternal God. Everest is just like shrinks down to like a little pebble on the beach. Or take your experience that you've tried to find satisfaction in and compare that to experiencing the eternal God. They can't compare. They just can't. So it sets us free from that. Another thing it sets us free from is from misplaced priorities. You know, when we make our life matter, or when we look at what makes our life matter at the end of the day, that is going to change drastically depending on who and what I'm living for. If my priorities are a person other than Jesus, I'm never going to be satisfied. If I have to get satisfaction in my wife or my kids or my friends or whatever, I'm never going to get it. They're never going to get it from me because we're not made to fulfill that role. Only Jesus can fulfill that role. And if we're living for those other people in our life and trying to get that satisfaction, we're going to come up empty every time. Yeah, we're going to experience joy and happiness and love being around. I'm not trying to take away from that, but we're not going to be fulfilled or satisfied. And then what happens when that person is no longer in our life? What happens when we lose somebody who we once felt fulfillment in or tried to find that fulfillment in? If we have our full satisfaction in Jesus Christ, then it doesn't matter who comes and goes in our life, we are fully satisfied. The other thing it sets us free from is from the temporary. And when we keep our mind on the eternal things, all these other things in life, they just shrink in significance. They just shrink in significance. In Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 through 4, it says, "If then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things that are above, not on things that are on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory." I mean, think about it, guys. Think about all the ways that you have tried to spend the hours of your days searching for some kind of satisfaction. You know, we want satisfaction. If you're a parent, you could attest to this. We want satisfaction in our children. By the way, we want them to obey. We want them to grow up and love Jesus. We want them to act a certain way and to be polite and respectful. And when they behave and they do those things, like, oh, it's really satisfying to see that. And when they don't, you just well up inside and you're like, oh, I just want to disown these. No, I don't want to disown my children ever. I love them so much. But you guys know if you've been there, and it can make you exhausted, and that's because we're trying to get satisfaction through our children. Growing up, from the earliest age, we're trying to find satisfaction in everything. My daughter's saying, I want this, I need this, can I have this treat, can I go here, let's go to Chick-fil-A, let's go to Walmart, let's go to Target and buy something, walking by all the dollar stuff, I need this, my life depends on it. It's like, no, you don't, but we look for all these different things to satisfy us, and then as we grow up, those things go from dollar stuff, unless you're my wife who loves that dollar section in Target, right, when you walk in, you know, those things just get a little bit more expensive as we grow up. You know, we want it from our spouse. A lot of people get married like, oh, this is going to fill the void. This is going to do it. I found somebody who's going to treat me the way I deserve every single day of my life, and I'm going to feel loved and respected and appreciated every single day of my life, and it's going to be sunshine and rainbows. People laughing are those who have been married, and it's because we enter in with, oh my gosh, this person, I need this person in my life, and I'm not taking away from the love that you feel, the connection that you feel. It's awesome to want to share your life with somebody. I feel so blessed and fortunate to have a life partner in my wife that we get to laugh together and love together and experience new things. But if for some reason the Lord took her home, I should be no less satisfied in life. If for some reason I lost my children, Lord, please don't let it happen, but if it did, I should be no less satisfied. It's challenging, isn't it? You make me cry just thinking about it. You know, we want it in our experiences. We want it from our school achievements, from sports achievements, from our work, from our promotions, from our paycheck, from our hobbies. We want physical satisfaction. We want emotional satisfaction. The list goes on and on. Like Ravi Zacharias said, we have so many hungers that we're trying to fill. So we're willing to jump into addictions. We're willing to spend way more money than we make. We're willing to try the new thing, even if it's destructive. We're willing to try to fit in, even if that means compromising our character. And all along, Jesus is saying, give yourself for a higher cause. Live a transcendent life of love and eternality, and set your eyes on a bigger prize. It's not about this life. And that's so hard for us to get because we want the satisfaction from things in this life, and they all come back empty. And it's so hard for us to realize this truth that the Bible from front to back continually says that the only way to satisfy ourselves is in the absence of ourselves. Amen? Because finally we stop realizing that satisfaction comes from getting. Instead, satisfaction comes from giving our lives away. You know, Jesus told us to fill our arms with a couple things in the Bible. He says, fill your arms with a cross and fill your arms with the burdens of others. He did not say, fill your arms with the treasures that this world offers. He actually said the opposite of that, but it is so hard for us to reach out and carry the burdens of others when our arms are already full, or to carry our cross when we're trying to lug all of our stuff along with it. What we end up doing is setting the cross down so we can carry our stuff with us. St. Augustine said, it is easy to want things from the Lord and yet not want the Lord himself, as though the gift could ever be preferable to the giver. You know, Psalm 90:14 is a really sharp reminder that the only source that can possibly satisfy us is the great love from our great God. And guys, I don't want us, including me, to be guilty, like so many people are, of only wanting what he is offering and not wanting him alone. So let's just take a minute. I want you to think about this question. If you had the offer on the table given to you, if I had the ability and said, I'm going to guarantee you heaven, I'm going to guarantee you a blessed and meaningful life here on earth, but you don't have to have Jesus to get it, would you take the offer? I mean, not, don't shake your head yet. Think about it. Think about it. If you could still get heaven and a blessed and meaningful life and not Jesus, would you take it? And the only way to answer that is to look at how you're living your life. If you're living a life for the blessing, if you're living a life to get to heaven, if you're living a life for the meaning, or are you living a life to try to be with a person? And that's one thing that separates Christianity from everything else. Everybody else is striving to get to heaven. Everybody else wants that goal. They want nirvana. They want the reincarnation into a better life, whatever it is. And they're trying to do it apart from Jesus. What the Bible presents is, yeah, you're going to get those, but you get a person. But you get a person. And we need to want that person. Not the things, not the blessings, not the meaning. I'm not saying don't want blessings. I'm just saying those come secondary because God can't help himself but to be awesome and to give us things. He just wants to bless us and give us things, but that shouldn't be what we want. And we get to go to heaven because guess what? God wants to be with us forever because he loves us that much. And we should want to go to heaven only for the reason to be with him forever. And I know a lot of people that want to get to heaven because they want to see their loved ones again someday. I'm not taking away from your love for your loved ones, but how about let's get to heaven to be with Jesus forever? I mean, you might have had some pretty great people in your life. They don't compare to Jesus. I don't want my kids, after I'm gone, to want to get to heaven to be with me. I want them to get to heaven because they want to spend eternity with Jesus. And if they get to see me, that's awesome. But you know, there's people out there that are like, oh, they read Revelation, like, oh, are we just going to sit up there and worship Jesus for all of eternity? I want to go play golf or fishing or hang out with my family. It's like, are you kidding me? You get to spend eternity praising the eternal God who is amazing, who made you and everything else. What can compare to that? And that is the only way we can say, yes, we want the person, not the things. We want the giver, not the gift, is if we are longing every day, praying every day, because we want to be with him and experience him and see him at work. I mean, what's prayer about if it's not being connected with Jesus? Do we want to be satisfied by a steadfast love, or do we want to be satisfied by the outcomes of that? Do we want to be satisfied by the next blessing that we get? And guys, this is an indictment on me too. This is a heart check, hopefully, for every single person in here. Do we want him above all else? Is that what our life is about? You know, this whole deal that we call life, it's not about things. It's not about finding the smooth path through life. But so many times, you know, we try to build up a big enough savings account so that we don't ever have to worry if a tragedy hits. That's where we find security. Or, you know, we do things to get safe in our job, find the next job so that we're going to be safe. Or we try to fortify our homes, and, you know, if you're like me and you got several guns in your home, and then you've got, you know, you get your ADT and whatever else, you got all these security systems, you're like, then I'll feel safe. And it's all finding security in empty things. And I'm not saying don't protect yourself. I'm not saying don't try to be safe. I'm not saying don't save money. I'm saying don't find security in that stuff, because it's just stuff and it could be gone like that. You know, in Colossians chapter 1, it gives a really good picture of who Jesus is. I'd really encourage you guys to go back and read through that at some point. If you haven't read it in a while, I'm not going to read it tonight. But basically, the main idea of that is it all started with Jesus, and it all ends with Jesus. Jesus created everything. He sustains everything. He is everything. And as Colossians chapter 3 said, and you notice me pause maybe in verse 4, it said, when Christ, who is your life. It doesn't say when Christ, who is a part of your life. It said Christ, who is your life. So what I want us to feel tonight, what I want us to walk away with tonight, is a really beautiful promise. That no matter how hungry or how thirsty, how parched you came in tonight, you can be fully satisfied right now. And you can leave fully satisfied. But guess what you're going to have to do the next morning? You're going to have to pray Psalm 90, verse 14, which says, I should have brought some gold stars. Do you think while they were wandering through the desert, they had to pray that a lot? They had to remind themselves of that a lot when the next tragedy hit, when another person passed away? You bet. You bet they had to memorize that thing and ingrain it in their minds and really just focus on it until it became real to them. And, you know, it's a guarantee. If you pray it, God says, you know, if you seek me with your whole heart, you're going to find me. If you want to be satisfied by God, you will be. It's a 100%, no need for a money-back guarantee. And some of you guys might feel like right now you're wandering through the wilderness, just like the nation of Israel. Maybe that wilderness phase just started. Maybe you've been there for a while and you don't see the end of it. But guess who was in the wilderness with Israel? Who was there? God was there. He didn't say, you're going into exile in Israel, and I'm going into the promised land without you. He said, no, you're going into the wilderness, and I'm going with you. And I'm going to be with you, and I'm going to stay with you until you're gone, and then I'm going to bring in the next generation in. That picture of what Psalm 90:14 says is steadfast love. He might let a wilderness happen in your life, but he's going to be in the wilderness with you. So promised land or wilderness, it doesn't matter. We can be fully satisfied. So whether you're riding a mountaintop right now or you're in the deepest, darkest valley, you can be fully satisfied. That is the promise that Psalm 90, verse 14, and so many other parts of the Bible is giving to us. I'm going to close with out of John chapter 6, this really cool Bible that my girls have, talks about the names of God, and one of them is the bread of life, and, you know, to think about the bread of life and what that means, and even this verse, John 6:35, when he says, I am the bread of life, and whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. And it takes me back to the conversation he had with the woman at the well. It's like, you've been looking to men for your satisfaction. And you've had five husbands, and the one you're with now, you're not married to, and you're not finding it. Because I'm it. I'm the one you've been looking for. And he might be saying that to some of you in here, whether you've been looking for this in a person or in something. He's saying, I'm right here. I am the oxygen that you need. It's not empty. It's a never-ending source. Just take, and it's yours. And you'll never thirst. You'll never be hungry. John Piper said that God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him. And we can be as satisfied as we want to be. And every single person in here, I hope that you can leave tonight with a new sense of encouragement and hope that wherever you find yourself in life, whatever desperation you feel or emptiness you feel, that you can just finally rest and be at peace and be content with a never-ending source of steadfast love.
Thank you for listening to this message by Wellspring of Life Church in Western Colorado. If you'd like to learn more about